Welcome to the Gain Momentum podcast, focusing on timeless lessons from senior leaders in hospitality, food service, travel, and technology. Today's episode is a special one. It's something a little bit less timeless, but we're going to pick out some timeless lessons that apply to companies. And that is, we're centering this episode around high tech, which is ostensibly the Super Bowl of hotel technology. And we have two experts in the fields of sales and marketing for hotel tech vendors who are going to give you some insights into maximizing your ROI on this particular trade show, which then has applications for any other trade shows in other industries in terms of lessons that can be applied. So our two guests today are my regular co-host, Jason Amanis. How are you?
I'm well.
And we have here Gain's Chief Revenue Officer, Karen O'Neill. How are you?
Hi, great to be here.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you both here. And this is going to be a very powerful episode going forward. So we're going to start off with here, which is starting with the do's and don'ts. So what have you both seen in terms of what works and what doesn't at these trade shows?
Yeah. Jason, do you want me to go for it first?
Of course.
So I'm lucky enough, this I think is my 19th high tech officially. Oh my gosh. I tried to count back and I thought, oh my, how many years has it been? So I've seen a lot of different shows and different versions of high tech through the years in different cities. And I think that that, you know, kind of has sometimes a lot to do with the draw and the attention and getting the right kind of market share of attendees and of the right personas. But in terms of the do's and don'ts of the show, I think, you know, to me, the overarching number one principle that I would say is preparation is key, right? That is the do. You must prepare for this show. As you said, Adam, it is the high tech. High tech is the Super Bowl of our events for the year. And it is really imperative that if you are going for the first time, if you're a seasoned veteran like myself, if you're participating in the E20X competition, as an example, that you prepare. So that would be my first do. Jason, agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, high tech talk usually starts around into January, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody gets back.
Yeah, the year kicks off and then it comes.
Right. And then you start brainstorming right then. And you really got to put meat on that bone with each passing week. Otherwise, you miss opportunity. Again, mm-hmm. it's a huge event. There's so much that can be taken advantage of there. And you got to go.
You have to be prepared.
And sales and marketing have got to be right there
in lockstep
together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that could be even my number two. is that sales and marketing going into this event need to be in lockstep. So that means that preparation, again, is being the key here. But as you're preparing, the marketing team is beginning to build the momentum around the show. The sales team is doing the same by preparing at, you know, one possibility could be setting up meetings in advance. So what does that mean? That means that you need to be aware when the list comes out as people are signing up to join the event. You have to take advantage as an exhibitor of the free passes that you get as part of becoming an exhibitor for the event and really leverage those free passes to get more bodies at the event and get them on the show floor, booking meetings in advance, like I said, and making sure that you're making the most of those trade show hours when you are there. And that key being that the sales and the marketing team are really acting together to build the momentum for why these customers or prospects need to meet with you at the actual event itself.
That last point you said is so important, the why behind meeting with specific vendors, because once they release that email list, people who are attending are getting
bombarded.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are. You're right.
So yeah, it's best to be ready. So your marketing department needs to be ready for that list. Mm-hmm. Either you're the first email they see, or just you might as well wait and be the last, because everything in between is going to get lost.
Yeah. Well, what alternatives would you have to email to reach these people?
Yeah, I think that's a great one, right? Because, you know, we're having to be more and more creative these days. And I think that, you know, as you two both know, LinkedIn is such a great, terrific tool to get word out there and to kind of build that momentum. And so I think that LinkedIn is very powerful as an opportunity to also start to educate on your value proposition, on your product, on who's going to be in attendance at the show, and on, you know, specifics around your approach there.
Well, now to pick out another detail you said, Karen, which is to say you're building this funnel, you're reaching out to people, lining up those meetings, and then the meeting itself. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about booth spaces that are 10 by 10 feet, 20 by 20 feet. And the booths, they have a standardization of design. What can vendors do that is essential to make the most of that physical space, so that way you can have the best meetings possible on the trade show floor?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of having a space to converse on the show floor, and making your prospects or customers or partners comfortable to come in. So a very inviting space, I think, always works. You know, through the years, there's been lots of different booths there. There's been special colors that have been highlighted, right, that made a big splash. There have been double-decker booths. There's been spinners at the top so you can locate. There's lots of tricks that people, you know, consider. But I think that the overarching principle is you want to make it an inviting space and your prospects comfortable. I always found that, you know, maybe having simple things, having snacks, having drinks, having water, having, you know, a conversation area, whether that's a high top table or a sofa or chair area that you can sit down, having access to be able to show them the product as opposed to also just talk. So really having in your toolkit lots of things at your disposal that you can easily get to and be able to leverage for your conversation, because you have different personas there as well, right? You have different people that you're going to want to meet with. The show is about, at the end of the day, it's about obtaining more leads, building that funnel, getting more business. It's a business development opportunity. But business development can come in many shapes and sizes, right? Like it can come from a true prospect that you are really targeting and wanting to get over the line as part of the show. But it can also come from a partnership network, building that out, or, you know, lots of advisors and consultants that are in our space that are very influential and very knowledgeable that can help you in your product roadmap and your direction. So there's a lot of areas that are business development, but it may not be the stereotypical business development. And so for that reason, you want to make sure that you're making everybody comfortable that's there, number one. But then number two, you have these kind of various tools at your disposal that you can leverage as part of your conversation.
Yeah. I actually reached out to Steve Palmason, who some of you guys may know. I've never worked with him, but he comes highly recommended. Been to a lot of big shows, event management, and asked him, hey, what are your tips? Mm-hmm. So I have some tips. One of the things that he brought up was having the right people in the booth.
Right.
And this is a juggling act, because from the marketing side, I would have usually a couple of marketers in the booth. And then myself, I would float around in and out. But you would have salespeople pre-arrange meetings. And so their calendar during the day was booking up here. And they were only free at this 2 hours kind of thing. You know what I mean? And so you have to really coordinate with sales on who's available and when, because a lot of times, like, we were, you know, marketing a complex product that our marketers could only have a conversation so deep that, you know, if you wanted to take care of walk-ups and you'll get them, you know, you wanted the right people there, whether it was somebody from the product team or, you know, each salesperson had their schedule and they were ready to go. And then you also had to be flexible for, hey, wait a minute, I'm not going to be able to be there because I just got a meeting with so-and-so and whatnot. So be prepared for that one.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So on all these suggestions, though, they all come with a cost to them. So you talk about having some food service. It's not like you can go to the local Walgreens and just pick up some bottled water. You got to purchase from a select vendor that maybe has a little bit of a markup on that, right? Same thing with the Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely.
And your point is?
my point is you're saying these are worth it, these expenses, and to find
a way to... And to take it further, Karen, and I'd like to get your input on this, is a lot of times you're getting an extra meeting room.
Yeah.
That you stock full of water and snacks. Right?
Yes. I think the meeting room, again, there's been many seasons of change with the show, right? And if I think back to my days when I was with Micros, now Oracle, to your point, Jason, about the meetings, I mean, in some days I would have 15 back-to-back meetings. Yeah. They would all be in a meeting room, a private meeting room. And so I think that that was definitely kind of the norm for many of the large vendors and companies that were represented there. And then there came a time where there's been a little bit of an evolution, and some of the bigger companies have shifted from maybe sending 40, 50 people to this event and buying the biggest space possible to tailoring it down and just really being there and making the most of different space opportunities and different times and things outside of the show floor, which I know we'll probably talk about as well today. But I think to your question about the meeting rooms, I think a meeting room is great. It's a great opportunity to really provide also that personal attention. But at the same time, I think you have to be cognizant also of how the show, the organizers of the show and their focus on trying to get as many people on the show floor through and the traffic through the show floor and to their supporting events as much as possible, whether that's, you know, a panel or a tech talk or an E20X competition or something along those lines. But, you know, I would also kind of say that in lieu of that statement that I just made, you know, I think it's easy to forget about you have everybody has the mornings, and there is this time in the morning that is such a great opportunity to schedule meetings, which could be off the show floor in more of a private setting over breakfast or, you know, sharing a meal. So Adam, to your point about, well, if I don't really have the budget to do a full, you know, happy hour or something in the booth or snacks or cookies or what have you, what other opportunities are there? I think that is something that you could also potentially leverage is, you know, schedule the meetings at breakfast. Schedule a breakfast meeting, make a one-on-one session for those really important prospects that you want to feel, you want them to feel they have your one-on-one attention. And Jason, to your point, you have the right people there at that breakfast meeting. You make sure that it's very specialized and, you know, agenda-driven around what they want to talk about, what they want to see, and you still have your bag of tricks with you and the right personnel to support you and a little bit of a more maybe intimate setting than the show floor and the booth where you have some more privacy, you know, kind of in that type of environment.
Yeah, the product people are popular.
Yes.
With the salespeople. And so it's quite the juggling act of who's going to be in the booth. One of the other things I'll say about that private room, it's expensive.
It can be, yeah.
So if you can go to a 20 by 20, a lot of the 20 by 20 booth designs will allow for, like you mentioned, a small sofa.
Yeah, a seating area.
Yeah, we typically had two tabletops.
Right.
With two bar stools with backs that people could get comfortable, you know.
Yeah.
And you set those off to the side a bit so that you could have those one-on-ones. Yeah, you're on the floor and everything, but people, we were still having one-on-ones with, usually, again, a lot of times it was a salesperson and a product person talking with someone they had pre-arranged to meet and even pre-arranged what the agenda was, to your point.
Right, yeah. I think it's back to the statement about the product people and being popular. They're always popular. But I think as a veteran salesperson who has been the demo girl in the booth, I've been a senior leader in the booth, I've held different capacities and through the 19 high techs I've been to. But I would say that, you know, one little tidbit that I would mention is that, You know, when you think about if you're a sales executive and you're going to high tech again, whether this is your first time or you've been a couple times and you're just sharpening your skills of what to expect. I think, you know, you need to focus on back to the overarching point, which is this is about generating leads, boost traffic. You're about, you want to create this environment that you are having customers, prospects come through your booth, talk to you. You're having your booth full at, as much as you can. You're having as much activity and excitement there, seeing the new product, seeing the launch. But from a true demo perspective, when it comes to just the organic booth traffic that's coming through, you should really be focusing on a quick mini version of your demo. You don't want your, we don't really want the prospects to be spending an hour with you in the booth, right? Because, or monopolizing, to your point, Jason, a product person for an hour doing an in-depth demo. So there has to be that fine balance, which can be very tricky. So I think that, you know, kind of the takeaway from that would be organic booth traffic that's coming through, concentrate on a demo script that is quick, right? Maybe have loops of PowerPoint or slides or a video going, something that draws attention to your product going that doesn't need manual intervention, almost a self-service opportunity. On the flip side, I think also sometimes what works really well is if you're going to have some of those heavy hitters coming in through these prearranged meetings, or you get the high-tech list and you're not able to book the meeting with the big fish, but you know that they're there circling, you know, do something to draw attention to your booth. Like maybe it's a big screen. Maybe there's an opportunity to do the big demo on the larger screen in the booth where you have the product person engaged. So you're using the resources that are there for the right meetings and the right sessions. But the regular organic traffic that's coming through, keep them moving, keep them occupied, keep them excited. Get the follow-up meeting. That's your point of this session and this demo. You're giving them a sneak peek of what it looks like, and you're arranging almost like a discovery call, and you're arranging that follow-up in-depth session the following week after high tech.
So we've talked about tactics for on-site, on the trade show floor, the surrounding meetings and the breakfasts. Let's talk about the evenings, which are a big part.
They
can serve multiple purposes. So networking events in the evenings, is it worthwhile to throw a big party, or do you try to do one-on-one dinners, or do you try to do a client dinner where you're inviting 10 to 20 close prospects? What do you think works best, and how would you guide a tech company?
Jason, want me to go?
Yeah. Go ahead.
From my perspective, I think it really is dependent on where you are in your journey, right? Of course, like where you are in your journey. If you are new to coming to high tech, then maybe you're not going to get the same response that a larger company who's been coming for years and who has a larger budget to spend on their evening activity. So I think it really is dependent on that. I think, Adam, all of your suggestions are terrific and great. And, you know, again, my takeaway would be like, you know, yes, get social here at the show, right? The evening represents such an important part of your week in this year, Charlotte. So even if your company is not throwing the party, really check out. There's a lot of good, as we get closer to the show, there'll be different events that are either advertised or that you'll hear about, or that will, you know, you'll find in the opening reception, for example, as part of your participation, which is for everybody. So there are a lot of events that you can take advantage of even without throwing something. But if you are looking to invest in an evening activity, I think, you know, again, based on the size of the company, right? If you're a very large company, do I think that it's great for an evening activity? Yes. You know, a customer appreciation event, something along those lines that can be intimate, yet also really thank those clients that you have there, and also show potential prospects what it's like to be a customer of your company. I think that works great. If you're not at that scale and you're looking for maybe some other opportunities, there are a lot of great companies that are, let's say, in the scale-up side that get together and throw a collective party where you can join in sponsorship. And I think that again, is a great opportunity. I've done that many times with different companies that I've represented. And we had, you know, you get a certain number of invitations that you can send. There's a lot of great, you know, collaboration going on, enthusiasm. And, you know, kind of it gets, I think, the prospect thinking about their tech stack more holistically than you as just a single piece. So it could really elevate you up a little bit. And then I think the third side is your other suggestion, which it could be a mix of all three really too, is the third thing is, you know, these customer, very appropriate customer centric dinners. My favorite thing to do at high tech is always I would do one night of a customer dinner, but just not with one. I would invite three customers that, you know, to bring one or two people each that kind of had some similarities or there was something that brought them together, right? Maybe they were using the same product. Maybe they were in the same segment of business. Maybe they were Canadian, like, you know, just something interesting that brought them together. And maybe they didn't know each other that well. And I was the glue that was kind of bringing it. And my product was the glue that was bringing them together. That really brought a lot of interesting conversation to the table and, you know, areas of improvement, product lines that they could consider, you know, just different ways to, again, focus on business development, but somewhat indirectly. And I think that works great as well, too. So it really goes back to, again, what your budget is for the event and the size and where you are in your journey as a company. That would be my thought about that. Jason, anything to add that I missed?
We would try to get prospects to go have dinner or at least a drink with one of our super consumers, one of our clients that just loves us, you know. And a lot of times, I mean, they were more than willing because they had questions, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that sparked good conversation. So it's always a good idea to activate your super consumers.
Yes.
You know who they are. And if they're going to high tech, do great things for them right before high tech. Do great things for them while they're there. Treat them to dinner, for example. You know, the way you do business with them is really where the magic happens, but a little extra.
Yes, it was a long way.
Like I just went to a client advisory board meeting for one of my clients. And I was, right before we were coming on, I was thinking, oh, it would have been a really good idea to have that meeting like about 3 weeks right before high tech. Mm-hmm. Because they treated them like kings and queens, and they were just a buzz of their experience. You know, so you want to activate those folks because people buy from people.
Yeah.
I mean, when they go to high tech, they're talking to their peers, you know, about who's using what and how well it's going.
I think just to add to Jason's one other example that I've seen work well to, like, again, breed collaboration across vendors and across that community is to perhaps couple up with another vendor, right? Like a partner that you have an integration with, perhaps, and maybe you have a joint customer and have that joint customer join you, or have that prospect that is using the two products join you. I think that's also a really, you know, a really interesting dynamic because there's so much focus on openness and on integrations and on, you know, is it better to go with a single platform that handles all these different functions, or is it better to go best of breed if that's available? And I think in that best of breed kind of approach, as we used to call it back in the day, the reality is that you need to still integrate, right? You still need to get these systems talking in your tech stack. And so to Jason's points also about we're all humans here. We're all, you know, there's a human element of this that I think that if you go back to kind of that idea of working together and really, again, can show your customers that you are of this mindset, that you want to collaborate with others in the hospitality tech space, I think that's a big win-win in today's consumer eyes.
You know, you mentioned it's a good way to throw a party is to your tight integration partners.
Yes.
And those relationships between those salespeople are usually really good. And it gives you a chance to have some fun, bring some people in. They bring in their network. You bring in your network. And a lot can happen. Yeah. I've never been. I mean, I'll tell you, I don't like throwing parties. I'm not a throw a party guy. I'm just not. I hated it. I'm like, what the hell? I got to do this again? But the reality is, it can benefit. Salespeople love them.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is why you and I work well together, right? I like to throw parties.
If Karen wants a party, I'm throwing a party.
Yeah.
It, again, marketing has got to support sales. It's got to be in alignment with sales.
Agreed.
And sales will tell you, look, Jason, if you can just get this guy in the room, I can close him.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to throw a party.
Right.
I don't have money this year, so we're going to go talk to this vendor and this vendor and pull our funds together and we'll get those people in a room. So,
yeah. Just even thinking about one last thought, Adam, before we move on, is that, you know, even just, again, back to one of your earlier questions about the booth and about driving traffic. I mean, I think that this is all part of the puzzle, right? Like, if you were to proceed with a party or a relationship or an outing with a certain other collaborative vendor who you're in touch with, you know, look, bring that to the show floor. Have the collaboration carry through the whole week. It just doesn't have to be about that little small time slot for that evening. Have it have cross-pollination amongst the booths, you know, sending each other leads and opportunities. Hey, have you seen this XYZ product? Go check it out. Their booth 123. You know, maybe there's a you know, at one point there could be, if you have an actual goods or services that you could put in the booth of the other provider, or something that says that you're certified or you have an integration in place, a picture frame even that says we work with XYZ company, you know, like something to bring that collaboration together and to light and make that relationship kind of transcend across more than just the actual event.
You mentioned partnerships and dovetails into my next question about announcements at the show or in the weeks prior and using that to get more buzz and interest. What do you recommend? Our announcements at the show, they used to be really big. They still are. Yeah. But now we're on a 24-hour news cycle. Does it really matter
that
announcements are at the show? Or can you just announce something in May if it's ready to go? You don't need to hold back another month. What are your thoughts?
Jason, I think you should talk about this one first.
I think about holding off. If it's close, because I was thinking, you know, you got product releases, and if your product release, you got a good one, if you can time that with the high-tech cycle of news, go ahead and do it so that you can piggyback as much as possible off the news. And then you can get lost. But I also believe there's quite a bit of effort that needs to happen to not get lost beyond just a release. I think a release can add to the other activities that you're pulling together. I think that's the way I would go.
Interesting. I agree.
Yeah, I think I agree as well. I would add that, as you said, Adam, in the beginning, when we were talking about meetings, you know, they're inundated with a lot of data and information leading up to this show. And I think sometimes, especially, you know, as you're getting closer and closer, it could get lost in the shuffle. And, you know, so I think maybe draw a line in the sand, right? So like finish May, perhaps strong, but as you're leading up to the beginning of June and the releases around June could really get muddled because there's just a lot of traffic occurring and happening. And, you know, there could be some amplification of a release. You know, that's the only other caveat I would say, right? Like, so obviously there are some publications that are very active around high tech and design their magazines and their articles and their focus to be high tech specific, a high tech issue. And so in that sense, there could be, if you have an opportunity to join that magazine that each person's getting when they come into the show kind of thing, and you could have an article featured in that, well then, you know, obviously that's a great opportunity. So I think that there are some caveats, but I agree with Jason's suggestion, you know, to think thoughtfully as you're leading up to the show, have some big splashes along the way in that 60 days leading up, let's say 60 to 90 days leading up, but kind of draw that line as you're getting closer in June to, you know, kind of limiting that, and then obviously pick back up, you know, following the show with all this great news that's happening.
Yeah, you really, it's cumulative. Yeah. Like I flew back last high tech. I flew back next to a lady that she was shopping. That was her role for a management group, and so she was collecting information prior to the show and during the show, because she, it was her job to go back to her peers and say, okay, this is what I found. You know, this is interesting. This is this, this, and this. And you don't want to be left out.
Right.
You know, so you got to do whatever you can on whatever budget you have to get noticed. I mean,
yes.
you got to be interesting. You got to be different or you're going to get lost. You know, for startups, like, you know, Karen and I dealt with a handful that made E20X. Three of them have made E20X. And so they're getting free publicity. You know, they couldn't afford the publicity that they're getting from FTP all the way up through the show. You know, they're getting a kiosk, a place to be and have meetings. They're getting an opportunity to be on stage. Their logos are in multiple places. And everyone, a lot of people are interested in kind of what's next. So they, you know, people pay attention to that. It's a great way to be interesting leading up to that event. Now, we're also advising these folks, identify who's going to be there that you need to be talking to and get that meeting, prearrange those meetings. But, you know, again, it's cumulative. So imagine you make E20X, you have a product release, a timely product release, or, you know, a merger or an integration or whatever, and you get your prearranged meeting, you know, so there's a touch, you know, you meet this person at a happy hour that somebody else is throwing that you got invited to because you can't afford it. That's okay. You know, you want to, you could literally be on the other side of high tech with six or seven touches with a key buyer.
So being on the other side of high tech falls at an interesting time of year. It's the last week of June. Immediately afterwards, people are off to take a vacation, maybe for 4th of July or up here in Canada for Canada Day, or they're hoteliers. So they're entering peak season, which is, you know, everything that goes along with being at 90% occupancy. When's the best time to follow up and what's the best approach?
Yeah, that's a good one. The other thing that's happening is it's the end of the quarter, right? Like, so yeah. It's literally hitting right on the end of Q2 from a salesperson's perspective in terms of their bookings and their forecasting. I'm a creature of habit and I am a very quick follow-upper. If I had emails pending in my inbox, I'm the kind of person that has to read them. I can't leave them unread. So to me, I think that, and as a buyer in different ways, I like to have that diligence and to know that I'm top of mind. So I like to extend that also to in my salesmanship. Similarly, I mean, or again, to what we were just speaking about, look, I mean, the same flood that happened before the show is going to happen again after the show, right? So there naturally is going to be some time to kind of dig out, right? And people, as you said, go to, on holidays for Canada Day, July 4th, the end of the school year for if they have children. There's a lot of things happening at this time. So I think you have to really give, leading into Q3, I think you have to really focus on having realistic expectations. You're coming off this trade show high, right? After being at high tech, you're coming off this high. You have to be realistic that, sure, could you have that unicorn deal that quickly goes to close and is very quick to happen? Absolutely. But go back to your personal, your company's, the KPIs that you know, right? How long deals take to mature, the stages that they're in. Go back to the philosophies and the processes that you have in place. However long it typically, if you're supposed to follow up with a lead in 24 hours, well, then you should follow up with a lead in 24 hours. If your company rule is that you should put, you know, there's an automatic email that goes out or there's some sort of system generated messaging that goes out after a specific event or a specific trigger, well, then you follow that same requirement. So I think you have to really think about the company and the environment that you're in and the culture of the salesmanship that the company is breeding as part of your philosophy. But I think generally speaking, you know, I think it's very nice to provide very prompt, courteous follow-up after the event, and then continue to educate them and take them through your typical processes that you have as part of your sales funnel.
Prompt and courteous, that sounds like a grind right around the time when we are supposed to be on vacation.
For 4th of July. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, some companies, I think you can, there's so much smart technology out there now for sales teams, right, to leverage, where you can still provide a personalized communication automated, right? And you can still rely on content and quality information to share as part of your sales process today. And that holds true also after a trade show or an event. You know, use the tools. The preparation doesn't end at the event, right? Like, so back to my first point, like the preparation continues. It continues past the event. Being prepared is, you know, with this particular prospect or this lead that you've now generated, you have to continue that throughout and, you know, ensure that you're putting your best foot forward.
Well, it sounds to me like we need an eighth day of the week.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts?
I hope not.
any closing thoughts, Karen, Jason?
Be prepared.
Mine would be that, this is a great event. Get excited, high enthusiasm, rest up, make the most out of it. You know, really take advantage of the opportunity that is.
Comfortable shoes.
What? Oh, yeah. Comfortable shoes.
We didn't talk
shoes.
About comfortable shoes.
No, we didn't. Yeah, definitely where I've made that mistake many years. Definitely wear comfortable shoes. Definitely, you're going to be doing a lot of steps that week. Make sure that you have, Tic Tacs, a pen with you at all times to jot something down, a small notepad.
Stay hydrated.
Stay hydrated. Your phone or a lead scanner or something to record information down. Take advantage of those small, you know, some may seem insignificant, but make sure you take advantage of that too and really enjoy the event and the hospitality community.
Awesome advice. Jason, Karen, thank you for coming on. Thank you for the tips. And to everyone who's watching or listening, see you at the show.
Yeah. See you in Charlotte.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Gain Momentum podcast. To stay up to date, make sure to follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Gain Advisors, head to gainadvisors.com.